I'm here with Orlando Kelm. He's from the University of Texas at Austin. He's an associate professor of Hispanic linguistics and associate director of the Business Language Education Department. Orlando, thanks for joining us.
Hey, it's fun to be here. It actually is really fun to be here. It's been a pretty neat visit.
Yeah. Now, you're doing a forum today.
Today at 2 o'clock.
2 o'clock. It's called Income Statements with a Kiss on the Cheek. Calculating intercultural communication, an asset or a liability? That's a mouthful. What is this really going to talk about?
Sounds pretty good, though, doesn't it? I mixed it up pretty well there. You know, we're going to be talking about the cultural issues that affect international business. And one of the things we were even talking about last night when we were meeting with some faculty is that we're pretty confident that people are going to learn well the finance, the operations, the accounting, the marketing. But where we get in trouble with international business is not in the business side of things. It's in the dealing with people side of things.
Right.
Cultural issues come up. And so that's why the title, you know, mixes together this idea of your income statement with a kiss on the cheek. Because it really is the intercultural communication stuff that becomes vital when we work with people abroad.
Yeah, we can teach anybody how to do the book work.
The finance is going to take care of itself. Yeah. Marketing is going to take care of itself. But when you're all of a sudden with people from a different mindset culturally, you're going to say things and do things that are just going to be totally misinterpreted. So the more we can learn about that and be sensitive to it and be aware of how it affects people around us, the more successful we'll be in international business.
What are some key things people need to know as they get into international business?
So there are a lot of theories and models out there to kind of help people understand these sort of things. And I think that really helps. If you just say, what's going on culturally? It's like this big old cloud that how do you categorize it all?
Yeah.
And so what I chose today for this, for the forum talk, is just one very simple model that identifies seven key areas where cultural issues happen. And this is a colleague of mine in Michigan named David Victor who created this model. He made an acronym called LESCANT. It's seven letters of these seven areas. And so that is language, sometimes there are language differences, environment, sometimes it's the physical things around you, social organization, how society is put together, context, the high context, low context type of cultures, authority, who has power, how do we show respect to those that have power, N stands for the nonverbal things around us, and the T stands for time. And so the LESCANT model is seven areas where things might go crazy culturally. And what's nice about it is that once you've identified those seven areas, everything that goes on around you, you can start observing with that mindset. You know, so right now we're sitting here and I have a suit coat on with a white shirt and a tie, and you have a tie on, and we're in a room that's a certain temperature, and we can see outside. I mean, all these sort of things all of a sudden become culturally based. And, you know, for example, if you're in a different country, you're going to hear the noises that come from the window that's open. And you're not accustomed to having a meeting with all these noises from the street. Or if you're hot, you don't have a thermostat to change. You unloosen your tie. Or if you're cold, you put on another layer. You know, we live in a society where people change the thermostat. Most of the world puts on another layer.
Right.
And so those are physical things that are different. And so that's the game. The game is once you learn those seven categories, you learn to start observing everything around you and putting them in those categories along the way.
Yeah, I think it sounds like the big thing is being aware and observing.
And that model teaches you to observe things you wouldn't have seen otherwise. And so instead of just going, oh, that's weird, well, let me see if I can categorize something about that. Ah, in this situation, it's a matter of authority, that this guy is trying to show respect to somebody or is trying to show deference to somebody or doesn't want to make a decision because somebody else more important should be making that decision. And so we wouldn't have observed all that otherwise.
Now, this may be a hard question to answer, but do you have any anecdotes of when these international relations have kind of gone awry in your life?
Yeah. In fact, I gave one example last night when we met with the faculty when we had dinner. In English, as a native English speaker, we are really blunt the way we talk. And we use the inflection in our voice a lot. And so we can say, for example, he is really smart. He is smart. He's smart. And so we use our voice to kind of emphasize those words.
And it all means different things.
And right. Now, let's say, for example, I'm talking in Spanish, and I say, él es inteligente. Él es inteligente. Él es inteligente. Well, that sounds goofy in Spanish, because Spanish speakers don't use the tone of their voice to show emphasis as much as they'll use other things. So a Spanish speaker might say something like, es inteligente ella. And so they switch the word form, the word order, and put the word ella at the end of the sentence. And so instead of using your voice, you're using word order. Or a Spanish speaker might say something like, ella sí es inteligente, and add the word sí, like saying, she, yes, is smart, right? And so those little subtle things, what happens when all of a sudden you're not doing that? Or you're using your English intonation patterns when you're using Spanish words. Well, what's going to happen is that it's going to make you sound angry when you're not, or overexcited when you're not, or bored when you're not. And so what happens is, even though you're using the other language, if you're still imposing your native intonation and patterns on top of that, you're giving the wrong message to people. And so in my experience, what happens is when we meet with people internationally, no matter what language is being used, you're getting the wrong impression. You'll think, this person is angry. He's not angry. You're thinking he's bored. He's not bored. You're thinking he's overexcited, and he's not. So my experience is a lot of times Latin Americans, this is both in Spanish and in Portuguese, they will think that we're overexcited when we think we're just talking normally. And it's not uncommon for them to say, calm down. And you're thinking, I am calm. But da-da-da doesn't sound calm
right. When
you impose that intonation on other languages that way. So that's a really good example of, even if you're using the other language, you still might, without even knowing it, be giving off the wrong impression of the attitude or feelings that go with what you're saying.
And it's such a subtle thing, the intonation and the word order. Are there big things that people tend to do that just totally go off the rails?
English speakers and English culture, we are really direct and blunt in the way we say things. We'll say things like, I hate kids. For most cultures that are a little more sensitive about the way they say things, to just bluntly say, I hate kids, sounds incredibly harsh. I don't want that. Don't do this. All those kind of phrases just sound too harsh for most of the world. But for North Americans, that's kind of the way we talk. And so we are a culture that comes out and says things in ways that most of the world will give a hint, but don't actually come out and say it. And so you will say, would you like to buy this product? And they'll say something like, we'll think about it. We'll think about it is the hint, no, I do not want to buy it. But until our North American brain has heard the words, I do not want to buy this, get lost, we think there's still a chance.
we're ever optimistic, aren't we?
Right. And so the poor person on the other end is thinking, I've given this guy every hint possible. He's just not taking the hint. If we force other people to actually say the words, I do not want this, I do not like this, no, we're really causing them to be an embarrassing situation. And so that's what happens a lot. Our North American brain wants to hear it bluntly stated, or we don't get it. And most of the world is giving all the hints they can, and we're just not getting the hint. And so that does happen, and that has an effect. You can see if you're negotiating with somebody or trying to establish a relationship with somebody or to sell something, if you're not getting those hints and you're forcing them to say it bluntly in a way that they're not accustomed to, that's causing them to be very uncomfortable when you're just simply thinking you're conversing in normal tones.
Right.
And that happens a lot.
Is this your first time in Rexburg?
My son actually went to school here, and he graduated like 3 years ago. So yeah. I did come for his graduation, and then I came back to help him move because he continued to do a master's degree in accounting in Moscow. So I helped him load up the van and drive over to Moscow. So I've actually been here for that.
Oh, good. What's your impression of the campus and town?
Oh, are you kidding? This place is gorgeous. You know, I live in Austin, Texas, and Austin is pretty, but we have no fall colors. And I realize y'all are at the end of your fall color period, but for me, this is still just stunning to do that. And this campus is beautiful. And the whole creation of Brigham Young, Idaho is genius. You know, the track format and how do you bring more students here and the facilities they have. You know, we recently saw the basketball courts here.
Right.
And the person taking me throughout campus said, notice there are no bleachers here. And I thought, sure enough, this is not about spectator sports. This place exists for participation, playing in it. The mindset's neat. You know? Also, because my son did study here, I know that his job was to do maintenance of snow. Is it snow hall, snow building, snow...
Snow building.
Building. So that place was clean because my son got up at 4 o'clock in the morning to come and clean snow building while he was here. And it's cold outside. I mean, the thing that kid got up to be at work at 4 o'clock in the morning to clean snow building, way to go, son. I'm proud of you, you know?
Yeah, if you can do that, you can do basically anything else, right?
He also told me later that he didn't realize how sleep-deprived he was in the years that he studied here because he then, you know, went on somewhere else and didn't have to get up at 3, 4 o'clock in the morning anymore to clean snow building and said, it totally feels different to not be tired all the time. It's beautiful here. The other thing that's interesting is to have a temple, which is basically on campus.
Yeah.
That's pretty unique. I mean, there are hundreds of temples in the world, but I don't think there's any temple which is kind of on a university campus where students would be some of the major folks that go to it, you know?
Yeah. Well, not just go, but also they're the ones who are helping
other
people go through.
Yeah. I mean, because Idaho Falls is not all that far away.
Right.
You know, I live in Austin, Texas. We don't have two temples within 30 minutes of each other. So... that's
pretty
neat.
Well, Orlando, thank you so much.